Here we go. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the offices of Irrational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles in the middle of the Art Deco wonder that is the Eastern Columbia. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with my co-host, as always, Mr. Phil Lernes, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Dean Haglund.
You're welcome, Mr. Phil Lernes.
It is so exciting to be here in the historic core back in Los Angeles.
Finally.
It's been a few weeks. It feels like such a long time.
I forgot what the town looked like. I actually got lost driving around on the bus.
Just getting up this morning and, you know, bright and early at 9:30 and thinking had to get in for an early morning of work here at noon. And I wonder, how long has it been? I mean,
because we recorded everywhere. As you heard the shows, we've been recording a little over.
It isn't really, in this day and age, it isn't, at least for me, it isn't about the duration of time between having, for example, been here. It isn't how long we've been gone, in other words. It's how many places I've visited in between.
Right.
That's what really, I mean, especially when you're on one of those things like I was last weekend where I wake up in Virginia one morning and then go to D.C., then go to Dallas, then go to Portland. The next day I'm in San Jose, Oakland, you know, and then the next day Stockton.
You're like, where am I? It's like that Sid and Nancy in the movie where he says everything's going to be okay when we're in America. And Nancy goes, Sid, we are in America. And he opens the window and he's in New York. And he doesn't even know. I've had those moments.
I had an experience like that. I don't know if I've ever shared this on the show. I had an experience like that once. I was at a movie. I was seeing the Judi Dench, Cate Blanchett film, Notes on a Scandal.
Uh-huh.
And I loved it. It really I was really captured by it. I didn't even know what it was about when I went to see it, but I thought, well, you can't really do wrong with these performers.
Yeah.
So it was a rainy kind of afternoon and I went in and I saw it, and after leaving the theater, and I was still very much in the movie, and I loved that I recognized so many of my favorite places in London in that movie. So I go into the restroom. I'm washing my hands. I use the hand dryer,
of course.
And I see that it's made by the New England Hand Dryer Company. And I think this is so odd that there's no companies here in England that make hand dryers. They've got to import them from New England to do it.
I
thought, that's odd. And so anyway, so I wander outside and I'm thinking, you know what? I would like to go maybe to the pub, to my favorite pub, get a pint, just, you know, really let that film that I've just seen resonate with me and just, you know, mull it over some. And so I proceed towards my favorite pub. And I get so lost that I start to be really panicked until I realize I'm not in London, I'm in New York. Absolutely true.
Hilarious.
And it was dark.
It's so easy to get those two towns mixed up.
It was the combination of having traveled so much.
Right.
And forgetting.
And
but then also really being transported by that film.
Right.
And being so affected by the film. And
that
it's
still
thinking about it afterwards. Yeah.
And those British accents deep in your head.
Plus the open container of paint thinner that I bring along as my companion when I go to movies by myself.
And when you do post-production sound, apparently.
And when I am doing this podcast.
Thankfully. But we got so much to cover. You have a list a mile long. Of course, I never prepare anything. And so I think this means that our show is going to be spectacular.
We have so many contributions from listeners.
Let's talk.
We have so many issues that have been backing up as we've been traveling.
Yes.
Things we need to revisit from previous shows.
I got a backup issue.
Not the least of which, since we are at the opening of the show, and you just heard the delightful music called Bounce, is that what it's called?
Bouncing, yes.
Which, as many people know, has been used in other things, including most recently a video that went viral involving a motorcycle slamming into a wild turkey. And I have heard from Mr. Anthony Kilner that he is, in fact, working on a new... We threw down the gauntlet.
We did?
Opened up... the challenge
for
our listeners,
yes. Please submit a musical stinger,
a theme song,
perhaps.
A brand new theme song
that you had very specific guidelines
for your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Yes,
I asked for a lot. You were really amused by this. You may be American now, but you'll never take the Canada entirely out of Dean Haglund, and you just found it to be so
rude.
So rude. That I just kept asking for more and more and more
for free.
Uh, Because I said that it might be really fun had a theme song that had both a vocal version and an instrumental version.
Like MASH, I pointed out.
So we could, use one on one end of the show and one on the other end. Mm-hmm. And I threw out for examples, lyrically, a couple of my favorite theme songs. I like self-referential theme songs.
Yes.
Especially for a show like your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
That's all we do is reference ourselves. It's just a show that was revolving about the other show we did. That's all we do. We just review the past show.
We talk about other people's shows,
we do,
too. Anyway, and I brought up, of course, the theme song to It's Gary Shandling Show.
Yes.
Which, of course, was priceless. And Chris Isaac's theme song for the Late Late Show with Craig Kilborn.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I don't remember that one, but yes,
as
you
samples.
Did.
But anyway, Anthony Kilner let us know that he is working on it.
Fantastic.
I've heard that the B-Film extras who did the theme song to The Truth Is Out There may have something.
Wow. That's
too.
Something.
So this is going to be quite the battle of the bands.
Well, and I'd like to point out, we only use 5 seconds of the song on the top of the band.
Not always. Sometimes we really play out at the end a lot.
If we ever go short, which we never do, because we always
yeah, but
so
what
much.
I do love is a couple of times back when we were on Far Point Media, and you had actually laid in the full closing title song, and then somehow there'd be 18 minutes after that of nothing, and then the song would play again, and then you'd hear the Far Point Media tag.
Yeah.
It was funny.
That's
so
funny.
We have a couple shows that were on iTunes listed as, why is this an hour and a half?
It's not. It's my mistake.
But we really do. We have so much to cover. We were in, of course, Dragon Con.
Yes.
In Atlanta.
Spectacular.
Labor Day.
What fun. Thank you, everyone.
We are going to, we kind of promised, actually, or hinted that we would be doing this by now, or certainly maybe next week.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there with the camera. I recorded many things, including our Q&A after the screening of The Truth Is
yes,
Out There.
Very good.
A panel that you did on opening night there at Dragon Con.
Oh, that was
Friday
fine.
Night.
Yeah.
And so I've got a lot of stuff, and I'm going to cut it together into an entire Dragon Con themed installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and we will, but we will not probably put it up till
we go
middle of October.
Yes,
when next we're both traveling.
Yeah, that'd be
so
perfect.
There will be a little bit of a time lag between Dragon Con and that, but I don't think that'll make it any less fun.
No, nothing we said was actually pertinent to the weekend. Relevant.
Not necessarily, but it certainly does give you a feel for kind of the fun of the weekend, and that's what I want to say. This was my second time here.
Yeah.
I know you've been there 8 times. Is there any way, is there a sameness to all of them? Do they all take on their own kind of shape and feel? And if that's true, how did this one compare?
They do. I mean, there is a uniformity to feel, but this every year it's unique. Some are more crazy, and it depends on the experience you want to have. If you want to stay up till 5 a.m. partying and dancing, you can find that experience. If you want to go to bed at 10, like I did, first time ever for Dragon Con, that's also a lovely experience. Being at the quieter Sheraton Hotel this time instead of the loud, raucous Marriott, it was actually much more enjoyable. But perhaps I'm just partied out.
Of course, I stay by the airport. So
where that place rocks.
Because it is quiet. And it also is very easy to get to. It's 30 minutes.
Right.
Because of the MARTA train and 24-hour shuttle buses. So you can stay, you can party, and then you can go back and you can know that it's going to be quiet. And it's going to be quiet the next morning if you need to sleep something off a little bit. And
hello?
I'm talking about that party we went to in the green room with the green and blue drinks.
Weren't those crazy?
Oh, Lord.
And they were delicious. That's the thing. They were delicious.
And the more I had, the more the thirst was on me like a fever.
They must have put, it was like Gatorade. They put salt in it.
And by the way, we'd gotten a pretty good head start at 6 feet under that restaurant across from the cemetery where Margaret Mitchell is buried.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then we were
I get back, even before I've ordered, I get back to the table and you look up at me and go, I ordered you a pint.
Well, because I knew you like a pint. And they had a wide selection.
And then I went to the restroom again, and I came back, and you'd ordered me an IV because the ingesting it was taking too long.
That's right. Hurry it up.
So, second Dragon Con for me.
Yeah. Did you have fun?
I had a great time, and you know, a much different experience than, I mean, I was working, of course, but not working the same way of carrying a Steadicam rig and looking at everything through a camera lens is a totally different experience.
Right.
And also so focusing on the minute detail of process and on being ready and staying constantly alert for the shot,
right.
for the audio, for these things is different than experiencing it really as a person. And, you know, I loved it. I really do love it. I mean, you brought up the word on the panel about diversity, mm-hmm. and Dragon Con is one of these things that really does prove what we talk about in our film and what we talk about when we talk about our film, which is about our strength being in our diversity. I mean, you're talking about more than 100,000 people who come together with disparate tastes from disparate backgrounds, disparate likes, disparate political views, religious views, all
Absolutely.
These things, and they really do play well together.
Really well together.
I mean, I will witness the thing, like I did on the bus, of someone dressed up for some TV show, you know, to show their fandom of one TV show, looking across at other people on the bus going, so you're True Blooders, aren't you?
Yeah,
or whatever
right,
they're
whatever,
called, whatever
yeah,
the fans
anime,
are
whatever.
Called. You know, and they said, yeah, you know, we're dressed up, for, you know, for True Blood. And then the first woman saying, you know, boy, that show sucks. and I like, you know, I'm like, wow, really?
Really?
You know, you're coming here to this thing because, and it just was so disappointing. And it was disappointing to me just because what is so fantastic about it, putting the fan in fantastic.
Hello.
Is all these people have such wildly different interests and there are so many shows and there are so many cool books and subgenres within genres and TV shows and movies from this country, from other countries, from the past, things that are being developed for the future. And it's just so great if you can walk into that world with your arms open wide going, what are they dressed as? That's
right.
cool.
That's cool.
Oh, what
What's
is this
show?
Artwork for?
Yeah.
You know, what is it? You get to see the coolest stuff. And like I did talk about on that panel discussion we did after Truth Is Out There, just seeing that woman's T-shirt that made reference to autism. And, you know, I won't get into that conversation
right.
because we'll hear it on another show. But it's just
you learn
some really interesting stuff. And it's all just brought together by love of some kind of show or movie or whatever it is.
You know what? I think it's ironic and or somewhat fitting that it's also the same weekend as Burning Man in the desert.
Yeah.
Because Burning Man has that same aesthetic, only you have to go really far in the desert to do it and it's hot and dusty. Whereas this is in the comfort of a hotel and you sort of theme it around pop culture items, video games, television, movies. But at the same time, there's that feel of this anarchy, celebration of diversity, all that
and
kind
love.
Of
I mean,
love.
It sounds so silly, but it really is this celebration of love in both the Burning Man instance and Dragon Con. And that's why hearing the little bitchy, oh, that sucks, or hearing a, you know, this one man criticize his girlfriend because she wants to go to a Star Trek convention. And, you know, he's going, oh, Star Trek conventions, those are nerdy, those are
right.
geeky. And then he's interrupted criticizing the thing that she likes because he gets a text alert that lets him know that the next con he's going to, the actor who played Boba Fett in the original movies is going to be there. And isn't that the coolest thing?
Star Wars is cooler.
And
wow.
it's... And
that's funny, too, because, you know, I think some people go there to be, like, thinking that they're going to be totally outrageous. I'm going to be dressed as, you know, Sailor Moon, and I have a beard and a big, fat beer gut. And there's, like, six other Sailor Moons with big, fat beer guts and a beard. And they all get to hang around together. I always love seeing all the, you know, people who come together thinking that they're the only ones going to be
right.
loving that show. And then suddenly there's a whole army of them and they're all in the bar together.
And it was such a interesting difference, you know, being in Atlanta and then the next weekend being in Portland for the 10th anniversary of 9/11 for mm-hmm. the event we attended. And yet there was a real similarity in spirit and tone to both those events because Dragon Con, like we said, it's a whole bunch of people brought together through love of, you know, these shows and these TV or these comic books or these characters or whatever the love was that brought them there. And for the most part, you've got 100,000 or more people really playing well together and enjoying each other's love of things. Yes, it is disappointing when you know, you'll hear people who have love for something and then they've got to piss all over somebody else's things. You know, like right. How many people would be watching last night's Emmy Awards and going, oh, fuck Mad Men. Mad Men sucks, even though it's brilliant, right? Like, you're allowed to love what you love and still allowed to say, you know what, I may not enjoy this other thing, but people love it and they right. love it for good reason. And this Dragon Con reminds me of something, you know, especially vis-a-vis the Emmy Awards, right? Which is supposed to be excellence in right. broadcasting and all this. And I look at some of these shows and I go, well, how do they get nominated for anything? How are they even on the air?
Right.
But many people do love them. And it when I'm in my good on my good days, I appreciate that because fundamentally, what do we all want as human beings? We want to be loved not in spite of our flaws. We want to be loved for our flaws.
Mm.
We really, that's yeah, that that's lies right. beneath. And so it's fun when, look, there are shows that I have loved. I'm not going to name them, Remington Steele.
Nah.
That may have, let's say, flaws. And I may love them because of the flaws as much as in spite of them.
Right.
I don't have to apologize for them. I love them. And isn't that really part of the affection of the original Star Trek series?
Absolutely.
The cheesiness is part of the
Voyage
thing
to the
love.
Bottom of the Sea, the Land of the Giants, all of these things are flawed Erin Allen shows that you gotta love.
And so it's great to see at Dragon Con, you know, all these people come together, and even if they aren't gonna bring themselves to love what you love, they're gonna love that you love it.
Yes.
And
that's all you need, really.
And that's what would be nice if, you know, these awards, which we take so seriously and everything, if that's really what it was, is this celebration of, hey, look at what the rich buffet is that we make, and here's a way to maybe get to sample or be open to things that you might not have tried. Like, right. Did you watch the Emmys last night?
I saw the opening thing, and then I didn't watch much else.
Two things. Was turned on to two things. Well, one I was turned on to that I didn't know anything about, a PBS movie called Downton Abbey that written by Julian Fellowes. It won Best Movie and Best Writing.
Yeah, and I saw this too, and I thought, was that a spelling? I thought it was supposed to be Downtown Abbey.
But it's Downton Abbey, and yeah. So I'm going to find that. I already have it on my Netflix streaming queue because it's available for streaming.
Oh, are you staying with the streaming instead of the...
We'll talk about that in a minute. I got an apology email today from the CEO, Reed Hastings.
Good of him to email
because
you.
Netflix is as a DVD entity as of this morning. No more.
I know. Technically, I'm Quickster.
Yeah,
now,
the other one that I was reminded of was Harry's Law with Kathy Bates. I've heard good things about this.
Right?
The show's going to be going into its second series, and you know, as a caveat, I don't start to watch shows now until they're going into their second season because
it's too painful.
You know, you invest in this, and then it doesn't go. It doesn't get a second.
I know.
Season,
and then you're dressing up like that person at Dragon Con.
I know. It's so sad.
Like, but fight the power.
Canceled too soon.
That's right.
I'm sorry, Dean Haglund. That hit too close?
Oh,
anyway, so, you know, and that was what was really great. There were, of course, notable exceptions about this, but leading up to the 9/11 anniversary and doing Clyde's show, Clyde Lewis, mm-hmm. Who was our guest this last week, doing his show, you know, it was great because I got to really talk about many of the things that matter to me, which is, you know, how can we embrace stories? How can we embrace the stories that each of us have to tell, no matter the topic?
Right.
Even something like 9/11. How can we do that in such a way, with such a generosity, that we're all brought together through it? You know, and stop letting our differences be exploited to keep us apart.
Exactly.
And it was great on that show. It was great to be with him in Portland and with our friend Olav Phillips and with the people who were there throughout the evening. You know, it was people who were brought together, maybe not even in spite of differences, but because of differences and because it is fun to be with other people, especially other people who are different.
Right.
Be it at Dragon Con, be it at Burning Man, be it at a 9/11 commemorative event. Clyde Lewis said something to me at the end. He was very moved.
He seemed to be quite moved.
And by that piece, the special Lone Gunman piece that I had cut together from that interview that we did with them, never before seen footage.
Yep.
And And we aired it for the audience there in Portland. And, of course, the radio audience listening to Clyde's show got to hear it. Yeah. And he was very moved by it afterwards. And, you know, he came up to me afterwards to thank me. And he said something that was just really profound. And he talked about how he felt in his own way, you know, the show and the evening had started to put out into the world an energy of how we can let go, how we can move on, how we can build
towards
and he said that wouldn't have been possible were he and I not kindred spirits. And that's an interesting word, isn't it? The phrase kindred spirits,
because I would never think the two of you would have find any common ground. Really,
you could think of all the ways in which we are different.
Yes.
And when we get so wrapped up in whether we have the same tastes in TV shows or the same taste in music or in clothing or politics or any of these things, we lose sight of the most important thing, which is
having a
kinship in spirit.
Right.
And that goes beyond personality,
mm-hmm.
and it goes beyond tastes.
Absolutely, because those are acquired.
And you see it, again, at events like Dragon Con. You see it in at Burning Man, and we saw it in Portland.
Hello. How great was that?
It was really
great.
Fantastic.
How great. You going to talk Emmys?
The Emmys. I was just going to say a couple of things that I loved about the Emmys were the supporting actress awards for both comedy and drama.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when the person who's most deserving, both in the sense of the specific work they did, gets
recognized.
The award, and also for the time they've put in. Also, I have been saying all year, had I not, that if you are not watching Justified, seeing Margot Martindale's performance on Justified, you're missing the best acting on television.
Right.
Her performance was hands down the best performance by an actor on television this past year.
And did she not win?
And she won. And that's just so great, because it's one of those things where you never know if enough people are going to see it for the person to win.
Thankfully, all of television listens to Chillpack Hollywood Hour.
They do. Listen to their Chillpack Hollywood
That's
Hour.
That's right. And get their cues.
And it's just so wonderful, too, because this is a woman that you've seen in so many movies.
Yeah.
Million Dollar Baby. She was fantastic. Playing Hilary Swank's mother in the film. And she, you know, she's a woman. She's mature. She's well into her career now. And for her to receive these accolades right now, it's just
delightful.
It's inspiring,
right?
And it just makes you feel good. And then on the other side of the aisle, in the comedy category, Julie Bowen wins.
Yeah.
And you know, Julie Bowen is a woman. First of all, super pretty.
Yes,
she's so pretty. She's so sexy. She's so funny.
Great.
Fiercely intelligent.
Yes.
Just withering precision in terms of her looks and in terms of
Great in Boston Legal.
And before that, in Ed. So you're talking about someone who, over more than the past decade, Ed, Boston Legal, and now Modern Family, not only a regular on three shows, but on three really acclaimed shows.
Yeah.
And no one might be tuning into any of these shows because Julie Bowen's on them.
Right.
But everyone who does tune into these shows are enjoying them a hell of a lot more because she's in them.
So true.
And, you know, and it reminds you of why television is different than film, no matter how much they constantly try to cast maybe movie stars in TV shows as if that's going to be enough.
Right.
We do not watch shows for the actors. I know.
What?
I know X-Files fans would disagree. Oh, no, it's Duchovny and Gillian Anderson. But the point was, you didn't know who they were at the beginning.
At the beginning? That's right.
You fall in love with the characters.
And the characters through the story.
And then if the story is revolved around exploring those characters' journeys, well, now you're really on to something.
Absolutely.
But it isn't like film where, you'll see a movie if you like the actor.
Right.
In television, you might check out the pilot. If you like an actor, you might give it another go if you like the actor.
Or you might wait a whole season.
But those characters are why you come back again and again.
Yeah.
That's why. And so it's really fun when an actress like Julie Bowen gets recognition, because she's had a great career for herself, obviously. But she's never... But she's not, you know, what you would call a star in that way. It's not her personality bringing you to the show.
Right.
It's her using everything at her disposal to really create a character that is worthy of coming back to again and again.
Absolutely. And fun. And how great is Modern Family in terms of ensemble acting, too? I mean, there is a show where you would never guess that why is she supporting and not lead? You know, that's sort of the one of those discretionary things that comes when you have an ensemble cast.
Right.
Because it's like she, to me, is as much a lead in Modern Family as anyone else. So to hear her get best supporting, I'm like, oh, is she supporting actress in that? I did not realize that. But I guess they all technically are supporting actors.
Right.
So there's no lead in Modern Family.
And what are they? And what do you know? We've talked about supporting a lot before. What does it mean? What is a supporting actor supporting? If you think that they're supporting the lead, well, that's a valid point of view. What I like, what you know, movies and television shows and plays that I like is when the supporting characters are supporting your belief in the world that you're seeing.
Ah, very good.
That's what they're holding up is the construct of this fictional world that you can enter into and believe in.
Exactly.
We might follow a lead if they are attractive, appealing, charismatic, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
We only believe that world, though, if we believe the supporting people all around it.
Good one.
The Emmys reminded me of something that we haven't had a chance to talk about also, though, before. Oscars.
Oscars are coming up?
Well, not really, but going to be hosted by Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that exciting?
And, you know, we've always said that, you know, he's a comeback. If anybody gets a comeback... You know, and he's been remade before.
Yeah.
But he's in what we would call need of a comeback right now. But his circumstances have just, everything about it has been, you know, this guy's going to get a comeback, and when he does, it's going to be enormous.
Yes. Because, you know, the suffering of Dave and, or what was the one
Meet
where
is Dave.
It? Meet Dave, the robot in his head. One Norbert.
Norbert, yeah.
That was...
Pluto Nash.
Oh, dear. That's going back. I just think in the recent, like within the last, this decade, like Pluto Nash was in the 90s. That was, to me, that was the beginning of it. There's like a whole decade of sad. So I'm hoping big things.
Well,
for
yeah.
Him
I mean, certainly him hosting the Oscars is an intriguing choice. He deserves the chance to do it as much as anyone else does.
Yes.
Of the... Producing the show is Brett Ratner, who just directed Tower Heist, which Eddie Murphy stars alongside Ben Stiller and Matthew Broderick, and the film is getting great buzz.
Oh, is that right?
Perfect
timing.
That's your comeback as well. So that'll be really interesting to see. Before we get into all this stuff from our listeners and all these other shows, we would be remiss if we did not mention... the celebrity death
of
John Calley. We rarely talk about studio executives. We did talk about, of course, Edie Wasserman's death recently. So I like when we get into different avenues of arenas of Hollywood history.
Right.
But John Calley was, if you define studio executive in the classic sense of certainly the 70s onwards, it's John Calley. I mean, this man ran Warner Brothers.
Right.
At one time, he ran United Artists.
I think he was at Fox.
Sony Pictures. He started as a producer, however, as opposed to many of the executives in place today.
Right, that were Harvard mailroom.
Two of his early films, The Loved One, which I always have really appreciated, and Catch 22.
Ah.
Started his relationship with Mike Nichols.
Yeah.
And in, I think it was 99, he won an Irving Thalberg.
Oh, Lifetime Achievement Award.
So anyway, he is absolutely the kind of studio executive. When he was an executive, when he was in charge of things, we were decrying the quality of studio executives wishing for the showmen of yesteryear. Now we're in a totally different place, and we long for the executives of John Calley's,
I know.
Ilk.
Somebody who's like from the movie biz, as opposed to businessmen.
Using producing as stepping stone into the executive chair seemed so distasteful at that time.
I know.
And now it's so refreshing because at least they learned how to make movies.
At one point, they understood the process a little bit. Yeah. And isn't that weird?
Now,
but it's sad that he's passed.
Now, And then the other passing, I think we can probably, I don't know how you ever recover from, certainly not dead, but a celebrity who is really down on his luck so much that I don't know if there is ever going to be a comeback from this. I'm speaking about SpongeBob. This viral video of SpongeBob getting into a fight on Hollywood Boulevard.
I not
and
seen
being
this.
Carried away in handcuffs, as were the women who fought him. I guess, you know, knowing those guys on Hollywood Boulevard a little bit as I do, they get very foul-mouthed and very,
very angry. They're angry. They're not happy fellows in those costumes. Anybody can go buy a costume.
They're not on the right meds.
They're not. And this is sort of a last thing before homelessness for a lot of these
And but it's below homelessness. So,
oh my God! Yes, it's below homelessness.
So
perhaps you forgot the demonstration in front of City Hall when they made that thing illegal, where Batman and Superman all had picket signs.
So look this up if you haven't seen it: SpongeBob getting into a fist fight with women in front of the Kodak Theater. Uh-huh. That's bad. And then at the same time, an extensive study comes out that shows that watching SpongeBob impairs learning in children.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Because
significantly impairs learning.
I think squirrels have no other breathing apparatus, or what happens? What do I not learn?
There's no comeback from that. I mean, I don't know.
That is impairs learning.
Yeah.
Because I've watched a couple.
You know, Lily's Lily's sister has two young children, and she actually forbade them from ever watching SpongeBob. She could kind of tell this is not good for kids to be watching. Right. And so she said, you can't do it. But the problem is, of course, then it becomes the forbidden fruit.
That they have to see.
So recently, Lily's sister was in her office and hears the door lock from the outside.
Oh, no.
So she's locked into her office. Yeah. But there's a glass window in the door.
Yeah.
So she peeks out. And there's her four-year-old daughter putting on SpongeBob. Locked mom into the office so that she can watch SpongeBob.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, that didn't impair a certain type of learning.
There you go. Well, because she hadn't watched it yet. Then she'll forget how to unlock mom.
It inspired a certain criminal intelligence. That it was the perfect crime. Now we did hear from CEO Reed Hastings of Netflix today,
telling
apologizing
you
for me.
Sorry, said thank you for staying as one of the last of the 4 million.
About for those who aren't aware, I guess who aren't in this country,
right?
Netflix had been a streaming and DVD service for quite some time, and they were upping their fees because really they thought they were going to be able to weed out DVD altogether. And when they realized that that wasn't going to happen, that they needed to maintain them, suddenly they realized the amount we're charging is not going to be able in the long term to support this. So my monthly fees, for example, went up a great deal, went up like 60% or something like that. And that's why he personally sent me an apology. But you know, they estimated, despite all the furor over it, they thought that, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. We're going to get 400,000 new subscribers last month.
Yeah.
Instead, they lost 600,000 subscribers. I mean, that's a net loss of 1 million if you think of where their estimates were. So that's huge.
That's a huge amount.
And what they've basically done now is what they should have done in the first place, which was rebrand.
Right.
If you want to make Netflix streaming, make it streaming. Close down your DVD division. People are going to go, what am I going to do with my DVDs? Well, there's this new company over here that we wholeheartedly endorse.
Right.
And suddenly, if people were paying for services from two different companies, it wouldn't have the same distaste of now suddenly dealing with the same company you've been dealing with, but your fees get doubled.
I rose by any other name, of course. Right, the new company called Quixter. I still get DVDs. I barely watch anything streaming. And so I will be Quixter and you'll be Netflix.
I will be both. I have to do both. But I've got to get my Harvey Birdman DVDs. Smiley's People. I'm watching Smiley's People again in anticipation of the remake of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Of course.
So I need those DVD and then I need the streaming so I can get Downton Abbey. I really am.
You're all over
their advertising. And now, by the way, available on streaming on Netflix. A little something called Karl Rove, I Love You.
What? Finally.
The Wait. is over. And I heard about this from listeners to Chill Back Hollywood Hour.
Come on.
That's how I found out about it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it had been available for streaming on Amazon for quite some time, but finally on Netflix.
You think Reed could have added that to his letter to
I think he probably did to everyone else. Oh, by the way, PPS. Sorry about
the Karl Rove,
not
I love
loving
you thing.
Karl Rove enough. I find it interesting, though, that you know they are taking this hit after all these years of skyrocketing stock prices.
Right.
Stocks plummeted 19%, which is kind of a big,
big
downturn.
Deal.
And you know there is competition gearing up. Starz walked away from their deal with Netflix, even though Netflix was offering multiple hundreds of millions of dollars, $400 million, $500 million, or whatever, and they walked away from the deal.
Now looking like a smart move.
Yeah, and because I think studios are realizing we've got to be able to say no to the enormous check unless we know that that check is enough to offset how much they're costing us in other ways. But Dish Network is transforming and restructuring Blockbuster into a streaming online service.
Ah, look at that. And then my
Dish
favorite.
Dish and Blockbuster branding together, coming into a streaming. Netflix has competition.
Never mind that. Amazon Prime just got offered on.
Right.
And so I signed up for my 1 month free trial to see how it's going to fly. And if it's $80 a year, I'm already saving more than what I'm paying just for the DVD.
Right.
Thing.
And I save, I mean, I get Amazon Prime all the time just because of how much money I save on shipping.
Right.
And then you get the streaming service.
On top
so many
of that.
Titles for free.
Holy smokes.
It's really.
That's crazy.
It's really something. Okay. We've got so much to hit here.
Let's go with the angry letters.
Well, I'm just going to go through this in order real quick.
Okay, in order.
Many people wrote taking you to task.
What?
For your discussion with Mark Hirschhorn that was on Labor Day, Monday.
Yes.
First Monday in September. It was Hedy Lamarr. Not Ida Lupino. Involved in the development of a secret communication system.
Right. Not that secret. It was the trans-channel thing, but yes.
But it was a secret communication system at that time, wasn't it being...
Yes, it was used in the military and given to
the
government.
Spy codes and things, right?
That's right.
No?
Yeah, but now we use it in our cell phones. But yes, it was Hedy Lamarr. I apologize for the mistake. Ida Lupino rolls off the tongue, and originally was told to me...
I'd heard that about her. What?
What? Those are horrible Hollywood stories. Hedy Lamarr, thank you everyone for that correction.
Also, love how much our show, the reach of our show, not as widespread as I would hope.
What?
As evidenced by the fact that big movement among the X-Files all around the world for a third X-Files film, and they still keep. We've got to urge Fox to give the green light, give the green light, even though, as we reported, they're not the holdup.
They're not the holdup, yeah.
And I am kind of amused about this thing, since Chris Carter is the holdup, since he clearly, as Frank Spotnitz said, if he had wanted there to be a third film, there would already be a third film, and so we should be grateful that there isn't a third film at this point, because it means he doesn't have a story yet that he's driven to tell.
Right.
And without that, please don't tell one.
Right. Don't just jam one down our throats or you'll be upset at the third one.
You know, and just let it sit.
Yes.
You know what? Let it sit for a decade for when the J.J. Abrams of that generation comes along to... Because the storyline has a big 2012 invasion scenario doesn't mean you can't come to it in 2022.
Right.
10 years after the invasion's begun when there's a real resistance taking place.
Exactly.
Being led by William Mulder, maybe?
Hello?
Yeah.
Who's got
and
a
then
little idea?
Suddenly Duchovny's coming in to play an elder statesman advising his son who he's rejoined with.
Look at you.
Thinking. I offered that storyline for free because I care.
I'm going to make that as a stop motion animation here in my kitchen. Telling you, that's going to be up. It's a 20
I thought that's what you'd been doing all show.
Stop motion animation. That's hilarious.
But it is so amusing, you know, the rumors. And it is just, you know, there's so much hunger for it, for any news. issues. So apparently, you know,
when Jillian
you read all these headlines, yeah. Jillian says it's going, it's ready to go. And then you read what she said.
Yeah, I hope there's one.
Yeah, I hope there's one is all she said.
Yeah.
And then in the Sunday Herald this weekend, of course, no, there isn't any real plans. I mean, I just meant that David and I are really eager to do one.
Right. We would love to do one.
Yeah. But we know of no plans.
We know of no plans. You know what I would love to do? The sixth episode of Silent Running. But, you know, there's no plans and no one's called me on it.
My one-man Julius Caesar.
That's right. Phil's doing one-man Julius Caesar.
Where
he said it on his podcast.
Where I stab myself in the back like I've done so many times before. And that is a callback, by the way, to the brilliant William Shatner and to our
his
friends... on Femme Fatales, you know, Mark Altman, who did Free Enterprise, because
yes.
That's a joke in Free Enterprise.
No, I anyway. Stab myself in the back.
Okay, some letters from listeners.
Yes.
Dear Dean and Phil.
That's us.
I meant to write to you for months, ever since you first mentioned it, but my mind apparently has holes and lost this information over
Welcome
and over
to my
again.
World.
Oh, is there still a chance to get your fourth anniversary special podcast? Hope I am not too late. In fact, yes, the special podcast took, this is from Christine, and she asked some other questions, but Christine has already received her special fourth anniversary bonus podcast. It only got finished a few weeks ago,
and I only
started sending it out. Worth the wait, though. I must
say,
it's a really good show. There's many never before heard elements on it,
soundtracks.
And for people who haven't heard every single episode of their Chilpak Hollywood Hour, there really are some highlights. I did not mean it to be a best of, but. In just finding conversations and weaving different pieces together, there really are some incredible highlights in there.
Awesome.
So, you know, especially if you're a newer listener, you might particularly enjoy it. And anyway, anyone can have this fourth anniversary bonus show.
Anyone?
Between now and the end of time. Thank you. just write us at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com, where all these emails are coming
from
today.
Yeah.
And say you want that show. We are charging, we'll send you a PayPal invoice. We're charging $1.29.
$1.29.
For this, like what you might pay on iTunes.
I might pay that
it's
on
the
iTunes.
Only show of Chilpak Hollywood Hour that does cost. This show is free every week.
We do it for love.
At chillpackhollywood.com and on iTunes and on Jackalope Radio and on the talksuperstation.com.
Yes.
It's free. It will always be free. This bonus show, if you decide to purchase this, please know that purchasing this bonus show helps us to continue to make this show free on a weekly basis.
See? That's all you're doing.
And instead of you know, doing a pledge drive or putting a donate here button on the show, we like giving you something even more.
Look at that.
And so please
consider
write
us. Consider better than a PBS tote bag.
Please write us if you would like that.
Please.
I've been listening to you guys for almost two years
she
now.
She continues.
Very much enjoy your show every week.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm interested in all things film, TV, and theater, and any other art form as well, so your weekly podcast is a great source for inside analysis of the business.
Here comes the bad news.
Also a loyal X-Files fan, so always enjoy hearing what her favorite gunman is up to.
You just say that because I'm on the air.
Anyway, she wanted to write about something we talked about a couple weeks ago, the rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yes. I had not seen this. You saw it.
She, as you, Dean Haglund, was under the impression that she had seen the whole movie after watching the trailer.
Right.
And that the movie was the ape version of Deep Blue Sea. I love that.
That's right.
It was only when they released the second trailer a week before the movie was released that it dawned on her that it might be a quite different movie and very much worth watching. And when she saw the movie, she enjoyed it very much, although she could have done without something at the end. I'm not going to mention it.
Don't mention
it. Spoiler alert.
Oh.
She thought that was kind of ridiculous and unnecessary.
Okay.
But she says, talking about bad marketing. If I had not heard and read all the good reviews about it, I would never have watched this movie.
Oh, right.
Because of this, the first trailer, which made it look like some trashy monster ape attack thing.
Yeah.
Although I love those trashy monster apes attacking things.
That's the last part of it.
I wonder what they were thinking. I know a lot of trailers are misleading and make the movie look better than it actually is, but why make it look like, in my opinion, a crappy movie when it is actually rather good? Wonder what the plan was. You want to handle this one?
I don't know. I mean, because I'm not sure the answer. I think
could it be that the marketing departments have a hard time recognizing when something is good.
Well, I think that's the case. I think, as you said, they may not even see the whole movie. They may, you know, get clips sent to them before the movie's even completed.
And let's face it, with the amount of money that goes into making this and marketing it, they are green-lighting it with a marketing plan already in their minds.
Right.
That, look, if we market it this way, this is the amount of money we will make.
Right. These are strict algorithms, business algorithms.
And if it meets a certain risk-benefit analysis based on those algorithms, then they greenlight it.
Yeah, because
then it becomes regardless of whether it turns out to be any good. Look, nobody sets out to make a bad movie.
Right.
But these people are thinking beyond the terms of good and bad. They're thinking in terms of these algorithms.
Right.
So then when it turns out to be good, do you scrap your original marketing campaign? You do so at very great peril.
Right.
Because you already seem to know what you think these numbers will support.
Right. Absolutely. So you are sort of pre-planning in advance based on certain aspects. And therefore, the sheer logistics of just sending out a global marketing campaign, now this day and date when all movies are released internationally around the world on the same day to prevent pirating, then you have to consider that your marketing plan has to be global as well. And to do that, that requires a huge amount of foresight and planning, which then negates anybody from even considering how the movie's going to turn out, good or bad. And it's just lucky that the movie was good because you had a bad trailer that then was counteracted by great reviews. And they had to pump up those reviews to counteract the fact they knew that they had the worst.
And of course, though, the irony being that the people behind that marketing and those trailers are going to get rewarded because the movie's a hit.
I know. And they're going to do the same thing again.
And so the marketing must have worked.
Right. Yeah. That was their plan all along. We make a crappy trailer, but then the awesome reviews were counteracted, and everybody will be curious, how could that awful-looking trailer make that great movie?
It used to be that filmmakers, you know, if the movie succeeded, it was a hit. It was great. The movie was good. If the movie failed, the marketing failed.
Right.
That's how filmmakers used to think. Now, of course, marketing drives everything. So now, if it's a hit, it's because the marketing was great.
Right.
And if it isn't a hit, it's because the movie was bad.
That's right. Isn't that funny?
She also thinks that truth, celebrity deaths, and school closings makes for a great tagline for her Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. And, of course, that's a tagline that Mr. Plissken used in one of his art works that he created.
That maybe we're making a T-shirt out of it?
We may be very well doing that.
Just saying.
Speaking of fan art, we recently received some wonderful fan art from the lovely and talented Paige Branson.
Oh, lovely Paige Branson.
Whom we both met at Dragon Con.
Yes, she's lovely.
And she wrote, "Hi, Dean and Phil. This is Paige. We met at Dragon Con this year."
Yes, she had three
different
costumes.
How could we not know, Paige? How could we know? You are unforgettable. I just wanted to thank you guys again for showing The Truth Is Out There and holding a fantastic Q&A afterwards. You guys were truly one of the highlights of the whole convention for me. Attached is the fan art, and we love it, Paige. Thank you. As independent filmmakers, what are your opinions about what Kevin Smith has done with distributing his film Red State? He was able to turn his back on the usual costly ways of marketing and selling a movie to the masses, mainly due to his built-in fan base that will support him regardless of what the press says. Is solely using the internet and other means to get an audience viable for filmmakers not as well-known just starting out? Are the times changing so much that anyone can use social media to get their movies made and or seen? What has been your experience with The Truth Is Out There in relation to marketing it on your own?
Wow. Well, you know, it's uphill battle no matter what. It's heavy lifting.
It is changing.
It is
changing. That's the thing. It is changing.
Yes.
It is in the process of moving that direction.
Right.
And
at the same time, I'm taking Kevin Smith off my Twitter feed because I am sick of hearing about Red State, frankly.
And I hope people are not feeling that way about The Truth Is Out There. I mean, I don't know.
Too. I don't know. How much is – what is oversaturation on putting the pressure – you know, this idea, this new term of direct to fans, direct to fans, that you can sell your movie direct to fans. You build up a fan base, sell direct to fans that your D2F is your whole new strategy. Build up your fan base, sell them – Well, then you're putting so much pressure. They're not your fans anymore.
Exactly. That's it.
It reminds me of that DirecTV commercial where suddenly everybody's head is Benjamin Franklin. Your friend's worth $100 and your other friend's worth $100. Tell them to sign up to DirecTV and you get $100 for every friend you sign up.
Right. And now you've just used the words friends and fan. And I think right now so many people are using them interchangeably.
Yeah.
Because you've got friends on Facebook or MySpace or whatever, right?
And about fans.
Or are they fans? You know, right. And it comes down to, look, are you trying to exploit people? One of the reasons, look, we wanted to sell our own movies. We wanted to distribute. We wanted to be a part of this process. We, as storytellers, like meeting people. We want to be involved in the story of releasing that movie, of meeting people, of learning from them when they see it. There's so much that goes into it that motivates us. Also, oh, by the way, we made a movie that is a love letter to truth seekers, and it was important to us that these same truth seekers who might come to the movie will know that this was made by and being released by three people, that there is no corporate entity looking to exploit them.
Right.
That was now, but I agree with you that I think that it can still be exploitation. It still can be, depending on what your approach is.
Right.
You know, do you have these fans just to make money off of them? Is that it? You know, as I say before, you know, I came to a very real turning point in my life a few years back when I realized I wasn't traveling around showing and making and promoting these movies so that I could keep making movies. I was making movies so that I would be allowed to travel around and meet people and
right.
show them that this is really how I sing for my supper. And, you know, and hopefully if I'm singing artfully, then I will get to eat better
right.
because people will appreciate it. And but it's because I do want to bring something to people.
Right.
And I rather think that's than exploiting anyone.
Right. And I think that's the motivation behind anything, which is always tricky because then you can never tell. Does Kevin Smith have that same motivation? He very well might.
He very well might.
And yet, here I am kind of sick of his tweets because they're overwhelming my tweet.
And so all I know is that, like I said, it was nice last week not to do any interviews about The Truth Is Out There. I enjoyed not doing right. any interviews about it.
Right.
The interviews that I'd done the week before in the UK on my you know weekly appearance or biweekly, or, you know, fortnightly appearance.
Fortnightly.
And on Clyde Lewis's, they were great conversations and I really enjoyed them. And at some point, you get tired of hearing yourself talk. You get tired of reading your own tweets about it. You want to isn't there anything else we can talk about?
Regenerate. I always think George Lucas screwed up those other three movies because all he did was talk about the first three. And so he had nothing to bring. He had no new artistic inspiration because he became so insular in talking about the first three Star Wars over and over that when the other three came about, they were sort of artistically bereft of anything. Because he had basically talked himself into a circle.
By the way, people can buy The Truth Is Out There
at right.
truth-is-out-there.com. Truth Is Out There with dashes in between.
All
We've got several different versions of it. You can download it. You can buy the Blu-ray, which should be available soon. We
Very
hope.
Very hopeful.
And, of course, two disc editions. You can buy them anywhere in Europe and in the U.S.
And that's
soon
not exploited.
In Australia.
Yes.
No, that's our sponsor now.
Right.
truthisoutthere.com. Paige also was curious about our opinions over AMC's recent choices with their flagship shows, threatening to cut Breaking Bad's fifth season from 13 to 7 or 8 episodes, axing Frank Darabont off The Walking Dead while cutting their budget, and threatening to cut 2 minutes out of Mad Men to insert more commercials. Why are they messing with a good thing when they're just starting to truly stand out?
Hmm.
Do you want me to handle this one?
Please do.
Because they are losing money hand over fist. Because AMC is a standalone
Yeah.
with no production partner, they get something like a dime for every household that has AMC on their cable, as opposed to, say, TNT or FX, which gets something closer to 75 cents
right.
per household. Plus, both of those, TNT and FX, have Warner Brothers and Fox, respectively, have production partners.
Right.
And why this matters is, to simplify it a great deal, why does a show like Southland, which is not the equal in any way of any of these AMC shows, make money because they've got a production partner.
Right.
Southland was sold to Brazil. Breaking Bad will never be sold to Brazil. Why was Southland sold to Brazil for a lot of money even though it won't air there? Because Warner Brothers said to Brazilian buyers, if you want the new Harry Potter movie, you buy
Southland.
Southland, the TV series.
Here's the package.
So they buy it, not to air it, but in order to get something they do want to show. And having been in foreign distribution, I know how often this goes on. It's why selling a film rarely works. You have to sell a package of films together.
And get a library together.
So I hope that answers a little bit of it. They're in a lot of trouble. So AMC, because they're standalone, gives storytellers freedom to tell these amazing things.
And if AMC executives are listening, you can partner with Rational Exuberance as your production arm for your whole all your production needs.
Erica Fraga, our dear friend Erica,
yes,
wrote us. She always tells us the great job that we're doing. She suggests a theme song that pumps up the audience a la Mortal Kombat while giving us the jazzy goodness of Harvey Birdman.
Wow.
And speaking of Harvey Birdman and how much I enjoyed it, and of course what a big fan you are, she recommended to us, and I was curious whether you'd seen these, her personal favorites, Venture Brothers and Archer.
Yes, I'm a big Venture Brothers fan. Archer, I have had trouble getting into because it reminded me of a earlier Adult Swim show that I sort of started digging, which the name is escaping me, but it had the evil guy with the chrome head and the and there's a lot of the same voiceover talent that's in Archer was in this earlier Adult Swim thing that I never had a chance to live.
Well, I will have to, once I'm done with Harvey Birdman, check out Venture Brothers.
I think you might enjoy Venture Brothers.
Now, Erica and many other people wrote to me expressing gratitude for my rant against the creator of Glee's behavior in the Glee Project.
Yes.
You might recall I watched an episode of this. And in it, the creator of Glee, the winner of the Glee Project, gets to be a character the next season on Glee, to play a character. And in this, there was one of the contestants refused to do something that he was supposed to do in the acting scene because it violated his own beliefs. In this case, he wouldn't kiss a girl. He felt he was cheating on his girlfriend if he kissed this girl.
Very good.
And so he wouldn't do it. And that caused some problems. And then when he was doing the performance number, the creator of Glee said, well, why should I keep you? I mean, I respect your beliefs.
Right.
But of course, which means I don't respect your beliefs. But how can I know that you're not going to cause problems? And he said, you know what? You're right. That's why I'm going to quit here.
Right.
Suddenly, the creator of Glee goes backstage to let him know we're voting you on. You won this week. You get to keep going because we really do admire this, and we're going to write this in. And he said, "No, you know, I'm just not interested in doing this. I've gone as far as I can go. I'm not interested in doing this anymore." And the more he said no, the more the guy who was angry at him and wanted to cut him out now wanted him. The power of no.
The power of
no. Interestingly, and kept trying to coerce him to stay. And that's always very interesting and unhealthy, and it's the level in which this business operates a lot, where the people in power will then resort to coercion to get you to do something that you don't want to do.
Right.
Okay, so I criticized this, and many people were complimentary of me for criticizing this, and as you know, this is an important theme for me in the violence prevention movement.
Totally. The power of no.
Of course, I also really enjoy getting angry. So a letter from Edward Thal, and forgive me, Edward, if I'm not pronouncing your last name correctly, Edward Thal, who writes in all caps, this was the subject heading, "You owe Brian Murphy a big-ass apology." Now,
Ryan,
all caps is very...
That says he was yelling at you.
Yeah. And what do we know? First of all, we know that the bigger someone's reaction, the older the material they're
very
dealing
good.
With. So clearly, whatever upset him had very little to do with what I said.
Right.
This goes back because why would you get so upset about what a podcast host said about a TV show? I don't know what age Edward Thal is. I'm imagining maybe young, but I don't know because, you know, again...
It's hard to tell.
Why would anyone my age be watching the Glee Project in the first place?
Well, that was my first question.
You know, exactly. But I started listening to your podcast after having heard you guest on Comedy Film Nerds podcast, finished listening to 220 and all caps. You owe Brian Murphy an apology. You said some pretty harsh things about this guy based on watching one episode of the Glee Project.
There you go.
And you got it, all caps, all wrong.
See?
Cameron, the redhead that left the show because he didn't think his morals would jive with the show, is a little whiner.
Right.
I think it's great that he stuck to his guns in what he believed in. Well, do you think it's great?
But,
or is he a little whiner?
Well, but you could be whiny and stick to your guns.
However, this all started because one of the girls in audition scene planted a little peck of a kiss on his lips and he freaked out. Not a deep kiss, just a peck. Mm. So apparently he felt his boundaries were crossed. His
right.
own personal sense of agency was taken from him. But because you define it as something little,
right?
It therefore should be little for him. And this is what I always caution. We can't compare fear. We can't compare pain with
right.
someone else. And in the violence prevention movement especially, this is what's really important. You know, we have to have the compassion to recognize that what hurts someone, and again, what might trigger very old material for them might be what for us is a very small thing.
Right. An issue you've already worked through.
He was crying on the phone to his mommy that he felt like he was cheating on his girlfriend. Come on. At 20 years old, who really feels this way over something so small and that he had nothing to do with? Well, again, you don't know him. And I will always err on the side of protecting and encouraging the expression, the authentic expression of feelings on a part of anyone who's young, and especially when they feel very alone in a circumstance,
right.
when all the pressures on them are to behave in a different way.
Right.
In this business, we know that. In corporate world, we know that. And it worries me about this country. This is one of the things that does worry me when I look at the tenor of conversation, that are we or have we always been or are we becoming a nation of bullies?
Hmm.
In that we often side with the person in power rather than with the little person who's standing all alone.
Fighting for the underdog.
Even if we might think that they're whining, even if we might think this is a little thing, shouldn't we stand with the little guy? Shouldn't we stand with the young person who hasn't had the experience? And shouldn't we stand with them so that they have the right to express this and work with this in their own time? No, a lot of times we don't do that. That's why, as you know, I find Project Runway so refreshing, because there's actual mentoring that
going
goes
on
in the form of
right.
Tim Gunn.
And so that, there's more?
There's a little bit more.
Okay.
So we're running about a minute long. But as far as what Murphy was telling him in the dressing room, he decided that he liked this guy's moral conviction so much that he was willing to actually write around it and for him. He was actually doing the opposite of what you said. I don't think so. I think that's exactly what I said.
Right.
He was trying to become coercive to get the guy to stay when
the
guy
show.
Wanted to leave. What he wanted was to leave.
Right.
And you may think that he should stay because he's been offered a job, but clearly, whatever you might think about this guy's sensitivity, about his intuition, by the way, his sensitivity may also be what made him such a good performer and singer in the first place.
Right.
Which you're deeming as a weakness. Might be the very source of his strength, and oh, by the way, will be at times the source of his strength. But
your strength is your weakness.
You know, clearly he read the blitz on this thing, which is this is not a healthy situation. And as someone who works in the industry, it rarely is a healthy situation,
so true.
Especially for young people.
Absolutely.
Who haven't really been able to drop into knowledge of who and what they are.
Yeah.
Because this is a world, and oh, by the way, a business that is constantly trying to turn you into something you're not, because of what might sell.
Exactly.
So I applaud him, and I would constantly urge everyone to take the side of the person who's standing alone, who feels up against it emotionally. And that's not what the creator of Glee was doing.
So Brian Murphy perhaps owes Phil Lernes an apology.
Anyway, I would just say this. I would say also the winner of the audition was to get a 7-episode arc. This is all about how they get great things if they win.
Yeah,
however, Brian Murphy, being such a terrible guy, decided not to kill the dreams of the last 4 contestants. I don't even know what this is all about.
You watched the other episodes.
Well, exactly. I didn't see any other episodes. But anyway, Edward hopes to hear a retraction soon. I don't know what I'm supposed to retract exactly, but I'll get back to the subject heading. I owe Brian Murphy a big-ass apology. Brian Murphy, I apologize to you.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. However, the creator of Glee, who I've been talking about, as I mentioned on that show, is actually Ryan Murphy, not Brian Murphy. And Edward Thal, you would know that if you'd bothered to watch and listen to their show.
Ah.
I'm Phil Lernes.
I'm Dean Haglund. See you next week.